Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from libertyrr.com. This is episode 12 of the podcast. I'm Mike, and in the studio with me, as always, back in the studio with me, as always, is my co-host, Eric.
It's good to be back.
Good to be back. It's been quite a break, huh?
Quite a break. Hey, things happen. Things come up. Work, family, germs, sicknesses, we have real lives with real responsibilities, we love doing the podcast, but sometimes it's unfortunately going to take a backseat to more pressing matters at the time. So that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, it was just kind of like a culmination of things. You had some illnesses, and then it rolled into one of my busiest times of the year at work. We do an annual event, and that was just, nonstop. So, it is what it is. We're back, and
we are back. There's a lot going on.
It's good to be back. I feel better now that all the stuff is behind us. It feels good to be back.
Absolutely, and we can continue the fight.
Have a little bit of fun here and talk about some issues. A lot went on while we were kind of in our break. We had the whole, Stop and Shop thing, which I wanted to talk about, but we didn't have time. Unions is a big one. We got a lot of pushback on the Facebook page on that, and it's libertarians aren't necessarily against private sector unions, but when the union has government protections in place, the free market doesn't work, and it's another crony situation like you have with business, right? They pass regulations and laws to protect themselves to stifle or even eliminate competition. Same thing with the unions, right? If you can't fire somebody, when they go on strike, they're the market's not reacting to the way it would normally react. And
we don't draw differentiations between, types of government cronyism. No. It doesn't matter if it's a union, if it's a corporation, it's a principle, right? And it's an economic reality. It doesn't really matter who's getting the government favor, right? It's distortion nonetheless. It's just distortion in one direction or another.
That's right. And that's one thing libertarians are consistent about. You apply the principle to the situation, not, mold your views based on the way the wind is blowing or something to that effect. And I was quite honest, I was disappointed at seeing a lot of libertarians, reactions, prominent libertarians within the state saying things that just, I'm like, are you even paying attention to the fact that these people are protected by crony legislation that,
either they're ignorant about it, about the laws that are in place. I was somewhat ignorant too. I mean, I was somewhat unaware that private sector unions have certain protections that, it's like you can't just fire them if they go on strike. It's really not that simple.
Right.
Obviously with public sector unions, that's almost goes without saying, but you'd think that in the private sector, it would be different, but in a lot of ways, it's really not. I thought one thing that was interesting, just one quick point that it really has nothing to do with unions per se, but more the market. One thing I noticed, of course, I've always been a Stop and Shop shopper. It's the closest market to my house. But one thing I noticed is that the market I ended up having to go to, how crowded it was, right? Because a lot of people weren't going to Stop and Shop either because they didn't want to deal with the hassle of being harassed, or maybe because they were supporting the union members, whatever the reason was. It goes to show you that there just the right amount of markets exist.
Yeah.
Right. There really are just the right amount of supermarkets. Like if a supermarket started to get too crowded, another one would open up because the market tells entrepreneurs and market chains, when they need to open up another store. And with all these stores closed, all of a sudden you get to see the long lines at all these other markets. And it makes you think and really appreciate about how the market works, and that it really does create an equilibrium to a certain extent in terms of demand and supply. Yeah. And I was like, wow, there's a whole lot of demand here and not enough supply. And this sucks, man. These lines are too long. The shelves are sort of empty, and the whole thing just reaffirmed my own appreciation for the marketplace and how it operates and how great it is.
Yeah, and how complex it really you know, can be
without any overlords controlling
it. That's why it can't be controlled. It's got to be a natural ebb and flow that it almost, you know, I say natural, right? Nature almost takes control of it, and it works that way.
Yeah, it's controlled by the thousands and thousands and thousands of actors and players who are involved in it,
making decisions based on, you know, their particular circumstance at that very moment. And
power to the people. To me, that's
and it can't be regulated. You can't manage that from a central, you know, authority.
This
is what we will do. That's what happens in things like Soviet Russia. They have, you know, millions of tires, but not enough bread. You know, it's like, what the heck's going on?
Yeah, it's totally ineffective.
Yeah. Something else I thought was kind of interesting, you know, a lot of the supporters of the union, strikers, if you will, were telling people to go to other places, right? Many of them non-union, which I thought was kind of funny.
That is sort of interesting.
But I also thought of this from a business perspective. This is an opportunity, right? So if, say, you're, you know, Shaw's or, you know, Dave's Market or Market Basket, one of these places, if you're naturally going to be getting people that might have not been customers, right? They might have been loyal to Stop and Shop. Now, this is your opportunity to shine and show good customer service and quality, you know, good prices and whatever you, to attract those people. Because once people get into that habit, now maybe you've changed their pattern and now they become a customer of yours instead of Stop. So I thought that was an interesting thing going on there. But anyway,
it's very interesting. It's not something that happens very often, right? So it's sort of unusual.
Right.
I think the last time there was a strike at Stop and Shop, it was like, you know, 12 years ago, and I think it lasted like 45 minutes, you know, or something like that. So it is interesting, and there's lots of different ways to look at it. Obviously, there's a lot of different sides to it, but I think that we can all appreciate sort of the market forces sort of showing themselves in a more blatant way, you know, that because it is hard to appreciate sometimes, you know. I think it was Tom Woods has a story about how there was one night when his kid was sick, you know, years and years and years ago, and he had to run out and get a humidifier, right? And it was like 2 a.m, and he went to like a 24-hour, you know,
Walmart
or whatever, and he's standing there, he's just staring at there's like a whole bunch of humidifiers.
Right.
He's like, you know, and just had this realization of how amazing it is that at 2 a.m. you can drive 5 minutes down the road, 10 minutes down the road, and get a humidifier for, you know, $25-$30, $29.99.
Yeah.
Just whenever you need one,
right?
Whenever you want one. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a miracle almost, like, you know, and it's easy to not notice those sorts of things.
It's funny. I remember I was listening to I think it was either a podcast or might have been like an audiobook or something to that effect. I don't recall, but I believe it was Simon Sinek. He's the guy that Know Your Why. He's kind of like does that thing, but he was talking about, I believe it was him, but whoever it was talking about something to the effect of toothpaste being too many options. This guy's obviously coming from a different perspective, right? Like, no, there aren't too many options. There's exactly as many options as there needs to be. Like, if there are too many options, they take the brand, you know, they take the flavor or whatever the heck, they take it off the shelf, right? And it goes away, you know? It's
well, yeah, he's like living in his own little world in the sense that, yeah, there's too many options for him.
Right.
Because he already knows what kind of toothpaste he likes.
Yeah. And he can't make a decision.
Everyone's supposed to like what he likes.
That's right.
I mean, come on. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Anyway. But so lots going on. We've got actually this very week, right now as we speak, I believe, one of the towns is holding a town council meeting, and quite an interesting subject. We often talk about Second Amendment, Article 1, Section 22, Rhode Island Constitution, gun rights, essentially. But I think this is an interesting twist and you know, spin, if you will, on the whole gun rights movement within the state. And obviously we're talking about what they're terming Second Amendment sanctuary cities and towns. And we've had one, Barreville, we know passed theirs. Hopkinton, I think it was Hopkinton passed theirs resolution. I think you had just mentioned before we started talking, what was it? West Greenwich.
Last night, it was Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
The 8th.
Yeah.
May 8th. I voted also to sort of adopt this sanctuary status for Second Amendment purposes.
Now, I believe I had read just before we went started recording, I believe it's Gloucester's doing theirs tonight, which I would assume they would be getting going by now, if not very shortly. So as we're recording this. But it's a quite an interesting thing, right? So there's been a lot of debate going back and forth. The governor's chimed in and the anti-gun groups have chimed in. And it's interesting how they're playing this. Essentially, it's a resolution. And again, got to understand that resolutions really have no legal standing. It's just
right.
a declaration saying that we are going to, you know, not support this, or we are going to support that, or we're going to declare, you know, Tuesday National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day, or whatever, you know, all these crazy things. But I do think it is interesting as it sends a message to the more populated areas, because these are just kind of taking place in the more rural areas of Rhode Island. That look, you don't get to say what we do in our area. You know, we have a say in what happens, you know. I thought that's quite interesting.
Well, yeah, and I think what's really interesting too is this whole idea of the sanctuary cities, yes. Sanctuary towns, and you know, you've got people who are, you know, huge supporters of the illegal immigration protections and sanctuary cities, you know, Providence, Central Falls, different places. Huge supporters of these policies where they're like, no, we're not going to abide by federal immigration laws. We're not going to turn people over to immigration, right? And so you've got people who are for and against that. Right. And then you've got now this new trend of these Second Amendment sanctuary cities, right? And you've got people for and against that. And a lot of the people who are for the ability of cities and towns to, quote unquote, be sanctuaries for immigrants, right? Those same people are against the right or the ability of a town to be sanctuaries for gun rights.
Right.
And vice versa.
Yes.
But libertarians, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I love the more local the government, the more local the control, the better. If you're a city that wants to give protections to immigrants in a particular area or a particular way, whether it's education or different policies or whatever, that's your community. Go ahead. As long as, you know, I'm not paying for it.
Right.
Right. As long as it's your own tax dollars, that's fine. The same thing with the Second Amendment sanctuaries. So I think it's interesting that you've got, you know, a lot of libertarians who would be most inclined to support the right of all these communities to adopt all of these policies or whatever they feel is best for them.
That's right. Yeah.
And isn't that really the way it should be?
Exactly right. Yeah, no, it's exactly right. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of mental gymnastics going through. You know, you're hearing from people of why one is applicable and not the other. And, you know, I was listening to Dan York the past 2 days. I've said this before, I can't stand listening to him. But when I get in the car to drive home, if he's on and there's a subject that's interesting, I will often listen, you know, at, you know, the my own peril, to be honest, because I end up pulling my hair out. But how he's taught, you know, many of the callers were talking about, you know, Providence and Alorza and how he's declared Providence as a sanctuary city. And York is, you know, very much against this whole thing, was saying something to the effect of, well, that's not a resolution by the town council or the city council. And that's just Alorza saying something. But again, this resolution by the town council has about the same effect, you know, and he goes on this thing about branding and how it's detrimental to the brand of the town and what's it going to look like and all this other stuff. And how can this town council just adopt a resolution without the input of the community? And but the point is the community has had input. They elected these people. That's how a representative government works. You elect right. people to make decisions or pass resolutions on your behalf. You don't like the resolutions or the laws or the ordinances they pass, you vote them out in the next election. You don't get to say. Now, you can send them a letter, you can make a phone call, you can send them an email to let them know your opinion or your disappointment, but ultimately the decision is theirs to make those.
Right.
That's why they're elected.
And it's almost like, in a weird way, he's making an anarchist argument, right? And he's saying like, oh, well, you got these councils are going rogue and they're deciding things for people who might not want. Well, yeah, that's kind of the whole idea of individual liberty. I don't want to say a bad word, but I think that, you know, it's like you do have these people on the other end who would disagree with both situations, right? Who would say, well, look, it doesn't matter if it's immigration or gun rights. A town can't just do whatever it wants to do. And I think that, look, you can say that resolutions and mayors saying thing and town councils passing resolutions don't mean anything in a legal sense. Okay, well, the Declaration of Independence didn't really mean anything in a legal sense, right? It didn't legally give them the right to secede from the British Empire. They fought a giant war over it, right? Because the British Empire decided it wasn't legal, or they couldn't just do this. So what it is, it's a shot across the bow. It's a declaration of independence from the state, and or the feds, and saying, look, we're not going along with this. It's nullification in a sense.
It is nullification.
And we're going to do it this way. If you have a problem, come at us.
That's it.
Come at us. Take us to court. Do whatever you want to do. But this is what we're doing. And if you don't like it, then you know what? I'll tell you where you can go.
Yeah. And my thought when I first heard it was, this is good. This is going to get other people as individuals thinking. So the town decides to pass this referendum, and now it's people start to say, you know what? I'm not going to comply. I, as an individual, am not going to comply with this, you know? And I think that's what needs to start happening, is individuals just, you know, again, I mean, it's often joked about, if everybody just stopped paying their taxes, what are they going to do? Arrest everybody? And then nobody's going to pay taxes. So, you know, I don't know if this is indicative of things to come and the way things are going, and people are just starting to get fed up and saying, no more, I'm not going to comply. I mean, we already know in other states where they've passed like confiscation laws, essentially what they de facto confiscation laws, where they've banned magazines and there's no grandfather clause. So you either have to sell them to somebody outside the state or destroy them or turn them into the police and or risk being, you know, charged with a felony if you're found in possession of these things. But nobody's turning anything in. Like, you know, the police stations aren't being flooded with, you know, in their amnesty. We used to have a thing in the Army called the amnesty box. It was like a box if someone had something they weren't, like a piece of, you know, live rounds or something, they could put it in this box and it, no questions asked kind of thing. Right? But, you know, there's no, you know, excess of people turning. So I think it's already happening. People just say, you know what, I'm not going to do it. And
right. Yeah. But, and I think you're right. I think that, you know, I think that when people see their local government, you know, sort of sticking up for themselves against a more powerful state government, it sort of shows them as an individual, as sort of a powerless individual, can stand up to their local government, right? Or their state government. It sort of shows them that, look, just because people say this is the way it has to be, it doesn't mean you have to comply. That's what these towns are saying.
Right.
Right. And I think that in a weird way, it's almost like, and this is nothing new. I think it's new in Rhode Island. This is not necessarily something that's a totally new phenomenon nationally. But it is sort of new here in a certain sense, but I think it is sort of a manifestation of the sort of Hoppian covenant community theory, right. Of libertarianism, which is the idea that, you know, things like towns or these small communities can still exist on a voluntary basis in a way that isn't coercive, right, or forceful, where people of like-minded interests can decide voluntarily to live with each other, right? And that's most likely how a libertarian society would end up manifesting itself, right? Because people are social creatures and they do tend to get together in groups,
right?
Right? Now, that can either morph into sort of a tribalist nature, like where people, you've got warring tribes and everyone's always at each other's throats and whatever, or you have a more peaceful assembly of different groups where everyone's kind of just has a live and let live mentality, and that's kind of what you have going on here. You've got people in Burrville who are saying, you know, this is kind of the way we want to live.
Yeah.
And we're not saying you have to live that way. If you want to have all your gun laws and your gun restrictions, then you can have them. We don't want them. Mm-hmm. And the same with immigration. You know, you have cities who are saying, look, if you don't want undocumented immigrants in your town, in your city, you know, that's fine. We want them here. We welcome them here. We want to protect them. That's fine too. And I think that, you know, I think this could be a indication of things to come, even if it's decades from now, where you've got more and more local communities taking more and more power into their own hands to sort of shape their way of life. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, that's a good thing. It's a trend in the right direction in terms of individual freedom, for you know, because And look, it's another, it's also a huge argument against this whole regionalization thing, which we talked about in the last podcast.
Yep.
You know, the more local the control, the better. The better it is for the individual, the better it is for the family. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's it's a good thing to see. I think that the more we can sort of just accept that not everyone's going to want to live the way we want to live, and that's okay.
Right.
As long as you're not hurting somebody else.
I was just going to say that. And, right. And that's the basis of it, right?
As long as they're
not harming or violating another person's rights.
Yeah, a town that legalized slavery wouldn't be okay with us, right?
Right.
Because that's obviously an aggression against other human beings. Yeah. But, you know, in these instances, it's not. No. In both instances, whether it's immigration or gun rights, there's no aggression taking place. And so, local communities should be able to shape these policies, as long as, like, Providence can't be accepting in all of these undocumented immigrants if it means that state tax dollars are going to go to supporting them. Now, that's a different story. Now you're making other communities pay for your, you know, the policies that you like. If you want to pay for it yourself through your own taxation or whatever it is you do in your city, then that's fine. And we shouldn't be against it.
Right. Here's another interesting point that York brought up was that, people are going to start selling their houses in these towns, you know, because for whatever reason, like, yeah.
So what?
Okay. That's what's supposed to happen. And they don't like the way things are. They move away.
There's a lot of people that are going to move in too.
That's And that's exactly right.
But people who are living in Providence right now, who are sick of the policies and they're,
that's exactly right.
They're going to be like, and if a lot of people are selling their houses in Burrville and Gloucester because they don't like this, then guess what's going to happen? The houses are going to be cheaper and more affordable for people. And it's going to look, oh man, so it's so frustrating.
Now you do bring up a good point. This might be an argument that gets thrown back at us is, okay, so say for example, if a community like Providence decides to ban all guns and all, they decide to, infringe on the right to free speech, is that acceptable? Is that the opposite extreme where they're enforcing more, regulation or restrictions on rights,
If they're not, I would say if they're not forcing people to be a part of that community, then it might not necessarily be a problem. It is a form of aggression to say, to force people not to be able to defend themselves or to force people, to speak a certain way or to not speak a certain way. But then again, would you as a libertarian or someone who's more of the anarchist persuasion have an issue with someone voluntarily choosing to live in that sort of environment?
Right.
That's sort of the basis of it. And I do think that one of the ideas that I sort of had around this issue, which is because a lot of people will say, well, if you don't like a town or a state, you can always move right? Yeah. Okay, sure. here's the thing, though, is that you own your property. And if I live in Providence and they pass a law I don't like, and they're starting to pass a lot of laws they don't like, I shouldn't have to sell my property just to exercise my individual freedoms, right? I should be able to keep my property and disassociate from the city or town.
Right.
Basically, I should be able to
opt out.
Right. I should be able to opt out. And it's the idea of letting towns and cities be more like homeowners associations that are conglomerations of property owners who are a part of that community voluntarily, and they can leave or join the association as they wish.
Right.
Right.
And get the benefits that association might provide.
Sure. Yeah. So, if you're a rabid socialist, and you like that sort of thing, and you want to live in a place where speech is heavily controlled and that there's no guns allowed or whatever, and you voluntarily want to live in that area, then that's fine. You should be able to do that. But if you live in within the city limits of Providence and you don't like that and you don't want to go along with that program, you shouldn't have to sell your property to get away from it. You should be able to just annex yourself and say, look, you guys no longer have jurisdiction over me. This is my property. I own it, not the city. I'm going to either be an island and just fall under state jurisdiction as a whole, or I'm going to, affiliate with a different town, or a different association somewhere else.
Yeah.
Obviously there's a lot of complexities with that.
Yep.
But just philosophically speaking, I think that's how it could work.
Yeah. I, this is really going down the really nitty gritty philosophical rabbit hole. We're very far from ever getting to that stage where we're making these kind of decisions. But there's a lot of interesting stuff. I think Walter Block has written a lot of stuff on this type of thing.
And fascinating
stuff. I've not read a lot of Walter Block, but and I think we've talked about him in the past.
Yeah, it's very academic.
Yeah, it is.
Hard to read sometimes, but fascinating.
Right. But again, like we're not at that point, right? So
no.
this type of stuff will get thrown at us, like, you know, who will build the roads, right? Well, how about we get rid of the entitlement programs that, you know, are nowhere near building roads and fighting fires. And, you know, it's like there's so much more that can be done before we get to that.
Right.
Having to make those.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
So I speaking of making decisions, the segue. individual liberty and people wanting to do what they want, you know, again, voluntary interactions with each other, gambling being one of those,
right.
A big one, right?
Right.
It's an activity that you take place voluntarily and you use to, you know, you're not forced. Nobody's holding a gun to your head to do it. And, you know, it's something that, is often made illegal by the government. You know, another prohibition, right? Just like, you know, all the other things, drugs and, you know, the list goes on. So many states federally have decided that, it's no longer, you know, they've relaxed the laws, if you will, or they've made it legal to gamble, but yet they still remain in control of this, of it. Right. And here in Rhode Island, it's kind of is a little bit of a unique situation because it's a state, part of the state constitution, which requires the people to vote on whether or not a particular gambling activity will be made legal, if that makes sense. So they recently started sports betting at Twin River and within Rhode Island, the state itself controls all gambling. It's not allowed to be in a private institution, as far as I know. And they have decided that it's okay for them to allow sports betting. As well as the table games and the slot machines and the video poker and all that other stuff. So the former chair of the Republican Party in Rhode Island, Samuel Bell, right? If I remember, Brandon Bell. Samuel Bell's the other guy.
Both a couple of dumb bells, yeah. But whatever.
Bell ends,
yeah.
They've decided to file a lawsuit suing the state over the constitutionality of allowing sports betting at Twin River. And I guess the premise is that it was not voted on by the people, so they want to repeal it or stop it, essentially.
Right. So this is a process lawsuit, right? What's fascinating to me about this is that as libertarians, there are constitutional libertarians, right? There are libertarians who, Ron Paul is probably a good example,
yeah.
Right? Someone who we both admire very much,
yep.
Who is a big fan of the Constitution. And then there are libertarians who are like, look, the Constitution, you know, look, what I think Dave Smith has the famous line, right? Where he says, the Constitution started us off with the smallest government in history, and we now have the biggest government in history,
yeah.
With the same Constitution, basically, right?
Yeah.
Slightly amended. So, constitutions, to me, if they restrict freedom, then what good are they?
That's right.
If they promote freedom, then that's great. All power to them. But here's a situation where, you've got. Now, look, I'm as against the state monopoly on gambling as anybody. I think it's a complete disaster. I think it's horrendous, and it shouldn't be. I think that the private casinos should be able to open wherever the hell they want. That's a major issue. However, if I have to choose between a state-run monopoly on gambling and a complete and utter total prohibition on gambling, I think that the state-run monopoly is better because at least you're not locked. You're giving people an option to participate in that behavior legally where they don't have to be afraid that they're going to go to prison. Yeah. Now, it's like choosing between pancreatic cancer and skin cancer. Right. So it's not a great choice.
Right.
But to file a lawsuit to strip away a law that makes something that, a lot of people have gone to jail for sports betting. Right. This is they've gotten people for under sports betting laws, and or they've under RICO laws and laws that were meant for the mafia, and locked people up because they had sports betting rings.
Not just that, a lot of people have been murdered over, you know, the black markets regulate themselves,
right?
Usually through extreme violence,
right?
You know, so that's the alternative. If again, I've used this analogy on the podcast a million times. Gay marriage, right? There's two predominant positions. It should be illegal and it should be legal, right? The government should sanction it or the government should make it illegal. And there is a third option. The government shouldn't be involved.
Not at all, right?
So that is the libertarian position.
Yes,
it's not. Oh, it should be illegal or it should be legal and the state should control it. The position is no, it should be privatized. The state, the Constitution should be amended to remove that provision and it should be legal.
Right.
So
exactly.
You don't have to, necessarily support or not support this lawsuit. You can take the third position and say, no, the real argument is why does the state have a monopoly on this?
Right.
That is the libertarian position.
Absolutely. And I think that I think that along with that, you can take the position where you're not saying this lawsuit makes sense because the people ought to be able to vote on this because the Constitution says it should, right? So you've got that constitutional argument to support it. Or you could say this lawsuit is bad. Because in this situation, the legislature actually does have the authority or whatever. When for me, it's like, you know, these people who are so just have this lust for democracy, like it's this great, the greatest thing ever. When, I mean, you know, in a sense that if the people vote for it, then, you know, no matter what it is, the people have spoken, and that's the way. Well, then why don't we just do everything by referendum? Why don't we pass every law by referendum and put it to the vote of the people? If the majority of people voted to bring back slavery, are we going to say, oh, that, well, the people have voted,
right?
That's what they wanted. No, of course not, because it's the mob rule to institute these oppressions on people are not good.
Right.
So let me get this straight. Here are the outcomes of this lawsuit, and this is why I think this lawsuit is stupid. And they should just can it. So they're going to use our court system, right? So that's going to take taxpayer money,
yep,
to file this lawsuit and to go through the process, right? So the two outcomes are they lose the lawsuit and everything stays the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or they win the lawsuit, they send out a referendum, it goes to a referendum, and the referendum, the people pass it and adopt it. And again, everything's
back to the way it is.
It's the way it is now anyway, right? Or the people vote to restrict it, mm-hmm, in which case now you've allowed the people to pass a referendum that oppresses the population in the sense of saying if you bet on sports, we can send you to jail.
That's right.
And what good outcome is there here?
There isn't.
Yeah. In terms of that makes it worth wasting taxpayer dollars to use the court system here. It's a political move. That's all this is. This is an opportunity for people on the right side of the aisle in government who are pissed off about this or that to make things difficult for the Democrats and the people in power in the state house. It's just political. It's a power play.
Yeah.
It's to get attention. It's to try to make this argument that they're the party of the people, blah, 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 blah. That's all this is, right? So their motivations aren't even kosher.
Right. And then you could suspect some of them just don't like gambling and believe in prohibition, which, you know, again, that's a whole nother issue which comes with its own set of problems, which we just discussed.
Of course.
Yeah. So why not use your energy again to fight the state monopoly?
Right. Exactly.
And let the private market work it, work it out.
Man, for Pete's sake, there's your lawsuit.
Yeah, that's the lawsuit.
That's the legit
libertarian lawsuit.
That's the lawsuit. Yeah, and look, and you know what? At least if you're going to spend taxpayer dollars, spend it to break up the state monopoly, spend it to make, privatized gambling. Libertarians, I'm having a hard time understanding it, and libertarians who are supportive of this lawsuit. I don't understand it. I've heard the arguments and I have a lot of respect for people who disagree with me on this. I really do. I just don't get it. I think that, I guess in the sense that, okay, well, you don't like the way they went about expanding their monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're so it's almost like, well, you know, they're circumventing the Constitution and the quote unquote voice of the people so that they can expand their state monopoly on gambling, right? Which is disgusting.
Right.
But at the same time, the other option is complete and utter prohibition. So why is this the fight that we're waging right. here?
The fight is that third option. It's
this is crazy.
Again, marijuana is another excellent position, right? You can have right. a complete prohibition. You can have a government regulated option, or you can have a complete decriminalization and let everybody make their own choices, good or bad.
Right. And I think
if you fight for that, knowing that you might get the government regulation, which is still from a pragmatic perspective, not necessarily in Rhode Island, because it opens you up to some more restrictions and again, another issue, but it's you're still fighting the principled argument and potentially attracting people to that argument that have never considered it before.
Right. Exactly. And it is totally based on the situation. So actually, I think that Ben Shapiro, who I listen to fairly regularly and who I disagree with on many things, actually has a very good point about this sort of perspective, right? In the sense of the sort of never Trump movement, right? So you've got these people who are never Trumpers who before the election were never Trumpers, and he was one of them, right? So Shapiro was one of these never Trumpers. But then the election happened and now Trump's the president. So it's already happened. He's already the president, right? So this idea, this never Trump mentality that some of these people still have, he's like, look, the situation's different now. He's already the president. So it's sort of the same thing with this gambling law. You know, if they were still in the process of passing the sports gambling,
right,
at that point, you can say, this is bad. We don't want this. What we do want is a complete legalization and privatization of sports gambling. But if you don't get that, once you don't get that, right, and what they do is they pass, like you said, the state-run monopoly on sports betting, now the situation on the field has changed.
Right.
Okay. Now the status quo is no longer prohibition. The status quo is state-run monopoly.
State-run monopoly.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with marijuana or cannabis, is that the status quo right now is basically it's decriminalization, right? Which some might argue is actually better than a state-run monopoly in the sense that you can engage in the smoking of cannabis and, you know, you can't sell it, obviously, but it's much, much more decriminalized than sports betting. Let's put it that way, right? So you could make the argument that that actually might be better than a state-run monopoly. I don't think it is because you still have people who are going to jail for selling it. But again, you have to look at what the situation on the ground is and what the status quo is and what is, you know, it's like, do we, when they're trying to set up the state-run monopoly on cannabis, yeah, while they're arguing for it, we can make that argument and say, this is not the way to go. This is not the right approach. The right approach is this, right? It's this much better way.
Yep.
That's not prohibition. That's not state-run monopoly. It's a privatized, hands-off system, right? But look, once we lose that battle and what we have is a state-run monopoly, I'm sorry, that's better than total prohibition. Now, there are people who are, what do you call them, agorists? Agorists,
yeah,
who,
yeah.
Right, who will say, well, I'd rather have a black market because this way I can engage in the black market and the government can't touch me. Well, you know what? Not everyone's willing to risk going to jail for the rest of their life, you know? And that's not fair to people.
But and you make an excellent point. And, you know, so you've got the fight, right? You've got the fight. We keep it a prohibition on this, or it's the state-run monopoly. You're fighting for no complete privatization. You lose that battle. The state-run monopoly wins, but you don't then continue to fight to repeal the state-run monopoly to go back to prohibition so you can fight to get rid of the state-run
Makes
monopoly.
No sense.
You just keep fighting, getting rid of the state-run monopoly. Like yeah. that's what you do.
A prohibition is not non-involvement on the part of the government.
Right.
Okay, so let's put it this way. This is another example, just and maybe just to close this out. Let's look at education, right? We have a state-run monopoly on education for the most part. There are some private schools or whatever, right. But they're still heavily regulated by the state. Yeah. So it's basically a state-run monopoly on education. Now, would you rather have a state-run monopoly on education or a ban on education where it was illegal to educate your child at all?
Yeah.
You know, what is worse? I am the most anti state run education guy that there is, but I don't want them banning education outright.
Yeah.
And to me, it's sort of the same thing. It doesn't, you know,
it's funny you mentioned. I just posted an article on the, from the, Future Freedom Foundation, talking about that very thing. So they use the analogy of, Hornberger was the one that wrote it. He used the analogy of, he basically flipped education and said in place of religion.
Oh, what that's if, fascinating.
It's short and it's kind of
really
cool
smart. Yeah. He's so smart.
Yeah. He just substituted the word and then, you know.
For all you libertarians out there who are, you know, so already looking ahead to 2020, Jacob Hornberger is someone to watch. He hasn't announced that he's running for president, but he has indicated that he's interested.
He's hinted all around it from what I've seen.
So, you know, he's a lot of videos of him on YouTube. Go check him out. He's very, 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 very smart.
Yeah.
Very smart.
I think we've made our point there. You know, the libertarian fight is separate. It's not agreeing with or disagreeing with necessarily the Republican fight in this case.
You know? Right. No,
there is a third option. That's the option that we should be fighting.
And speaking of third options, right? When it comes to government welfare programs, there is always a third option. It's not feed the children or starve. It's sometimes private charity can step in and help out the situation unless you stop them from doing so. So school lunches.
Yeah, school lunches. So there was an interesting development. I guess it was, well, it's been going on for about a year now.
It's
right?
The whole thing's been going on for a while. Yeah.
But it recently came back again, you know. So last year there was an issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is in Warwick, where there was a... you know, a balance on these kids' lunch accounts, the money that they would use, and the parents were behind in payments, and essentially it went into, you know, default, you know, collections. And they said, well, your child's no longer going to, until you pay your bill, your child's going to get whatever.
It was a cheese sandwich.
But back then it was cheese sandwich. Now it's sun butter and jelly.
Right.
I've never even heard of sun butter, to be honest with you.
Brand new to me. Well, you know, it makes sense actually. Now that I think about it, in schools that they don't want peanut butter.
Yeah, right.
Schools,
no, it makes sense.
So it's a peanut alternative.
I didn't even know it existed.
Sun butter.
I'm gonna try it. Maybe
sounds like something you put on when you go to the beach.
Right.
That's what it sounds like.
So there was a local person within the community that felt that, look, you know, I want to try to do something as a concerned citizen and help these families that might be having trouble paying their lunch bill for whatever reason. And she set up a collection and she raised a bunch of money and she was going to give it to the school to put towards these accounts to help bring them up into good standing. And I guess that brings us to where we are now. The school committee has either this happened again or the school committee has made a decision to where they are not allowing her for any of the proposals that she has given them a way this might be able to work. They're just saying, sorry, we can't do this.
It's unfathomable. And I totally just didn't pronounce that word right at all. It's incomprehensible. How about that?
There you go.
And the excuse that they use, so just maybe to flush this out a little bit more. So when there was a big controversy that around this idea of a lunch shaming, right? That these kids who are getting the cheese sandwiches, you know, were feeling ashamed in school because everyone knew if they were eating a cheese sandwich that their parents were, you know, quote unquote deadbeats, or they weren't paying the bill, and it was embarrassing for the kids, right? So in response to this, the school committee decided, okay, well, instead of, you know, giving them this cheese sandwich, we're going to give them this sun butter and jelly sandwich, which is already on the menu of items that they can choose from. So, and people do choose this item voluntarily. So there's necessarily not going to be this shaming issue, because, you know, you can't necessarily assume that just because a kid's eating this item that his family can't pay up. Now, the other aspect of this that's important to mention is that, there already is in place programs, welfare programs for low income families mm-hmm. who can't afford the lunches at school.
Yep.
Where it's 100% covered and paid for. So the families who owe this money are families who do not fall into that low income category. Correct. So you know, you would think that obviously these families can afford these lunches. So what are they saying? They're blaming their kids. They're saying their kids are adding items onto their lunches that they're not supposed to, and they're running up these tabs. Okay. So if your kid was doing that at the local ice cream stand, are you just going to sit there and say, well, I'm not paying it. I didn't say you could do it. Right. This is your kid. It's your responsibility. If he's running up a tab on something, it just because he's a kid doesn't mean that you're not responsible. Right. So of course, okay, so this woman, this wonderful woman, business owner, local business owner, put a jar out and had been collecting money for a while to try to pay, like you said, to pay down this lunch debt. Right. Yeah. And the excuse that the school department used as to why they couldn't take this money was that they didn't want to decide which families' debts got paid off and which ones didn't. As if they can't just apply the yeah. money across the board by a percentage basis to everybody, right? So if you so let's say it was $4,000-something, right? And let's say the total debt is $8,000. Let's say it's half of the total debt. So, you know, you just cut everybody's debt by 50%. If someone owes 100, now they owe 50. If someone owes 20, now they owe 10, right? You just, that's all.
Another point I think that another argument I heard against this was that it's not fair as well to the students who have been paying their bill and they're not getting any assistance because their accounts are up to date, and therefore it's inequitable because some kids are getting their balance paid off through charity and others are not, which I thought was a kind of a ridiculous argument.
That's totally ridiculous. You know, it's yeah. so, you know what, Mike? It's so unfair that I have to buy my daughter's Christmas presents. And it's not fair that these Toys for Tots
get free.
Kids get free gifts. Look, if it's voluntarily donated, who cares? Yeah. Who cares? That's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Look, just because you're able to afford your kids' lunches now doesn't mean that maybe you might not have an issue 4 months from now when one of you loses your job. Right. So the idea that, look, there's going to be a point in all of our lives where we're probably going to need some form of charity, whether it's from an organization or it's from a family member, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Oh, even if you're at lunch and, shoot, my paycheck's a day late. I don't have enough money to buy lunch, and your buddy picks up the tab. That's a form of charity.
That's right.
Unless you have to pay him back. Yeah. But right. But if he's like, no, don't worry about it. You know, it's on me. You don't even have to reciprocate. That's a form of charity. The same idea. And it reminds me of the government up in was it Keene, New Hampshire, who came down on these Robin Hood parking meters.
Yeah.
Advocate these people who were voluntarily filling people's meters with quarters who were running low on time. Yep. And they actually had the meter maid and the cops arrest them right. to stop them from filling people's meters so that they could write a ticket
right.
to the person like
for revenue.
It just goes to show you they don't really believe in charity. They don't believe in helping people. They want control. That's what they want.
Yeah.
Right? They don't really want necessarily for the kids in Providence schools to have access to sanitary female feminine hygiene products.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's that they want control over it.
Yeah. Well, I think that goes to the root of the problem is the school system controlling this, right? It's the fact that they're controlling how the kids are fed and how, you know, how that is taken. You know, I remember back to when I was in school many, many years ago, the lunch tokens. I don't know so kids who had free lunch, they qualified for free lunch. They got if I remember that, they were green tokens. And you would bring the token in too, and you'd give that to the lunch lady, and she would give you your tray and you'd go get your lunch. But the funny thing is, I do remember kids selling their lunch tokens. Like in high school, we had like the hot lunch line, and you had the a la carte line where you could go get a whatever. And kids would, you know, they didn't want hot lunch, so they'd sell their token to a kid that did want hot lunch who was paying, because we didn't have an account. You brought in $1.50 or whatever it was, and you physically paid, you know, so they would give $1.50 to the someone who was getting hot lunch anyway. They didn't give a shit if they. So much for that. So they didn't care if they were getting a lunch token or not, and they'd give the $1.50 to the kid. And the kid would get his cheeseburger instead at the a la carte line.
Right.
So it was funny how that worked, but. Yeah, but now they've gotten rid of that entire transaction because of, again, the shame. So some kids might have tokens and they feel embarrassed that they have to give a token as opposed to another kid who's got cash. And then, you know, I don't know why they wanted cash out of the equation. Maybe kids were, you know, mom and dad forgot to give them the cash.
Who knows? Or,
I don't know. But
who knows?
Yeah, I mean, there's a million and one reasons. But
and I get the lunch shaming thing, especially when it comes to like little kids, you know, and I get that. And, you know, but. At the same time, you know, why is it, it's almost like, why is it that the kids are the ones feeling the shame in this scenario anyway?
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be the parents, to a certain extent, who are feeling some level of shame here, in the sense that they're letting their kids continue to be in this situation? And, you know, I mean, it's just... Look, I don't know what people's lives are like, and I don't want to make assumptions. You know, maybe they really can't afford to pay whatever it is they owe. That is a very real possibility. But it's hard for me, and from my perspective, to just be like, look, if you owe, then, you know, maybe you cut something out this month.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you cook a little bit more at home this month. Maybe I don't know. There's ways to make cuts in your budget. On a short-term basis, and maybe it's going to be uncomfortable and it's not going to be ideal, you know, but you owe.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a sense that in our culture now where it's like debt is just not important. It doesn't matter. You don't need to pay it.
And again, it goes back to the government control of schools. If this was in a free market, lunch would be a feature of a school that you want to send your child to.
Right.
You might have a school that's a free school, right? It's a private free school. And part of their program in their endowment or however they raise their money in that school, lunch is included, you know? Or it might be a free school where you have to bring your lunch or buy a lunch. Or you might have a low-cost option where lunch, again, is provided or not. Then you have a high-cost option where lunch is provided or not. Like there's options to attract people to go to those schools, and the school determines how it's going to feed the students. And the parents decide if they like that benefit of that school and they're going to choose that school over another.
Right.
You know, so. Right.
Yeah, some parents might decide, you know what, I don't, this isn't that important to me. I'd rather bag my kids lunch.
Right.
Some parents might be like, you know, I really don't have time in the morning because of my job to bag my kids lunch. This school is more appealing because they have this lunch program. Maybe there's a school that's a K through 12 type school where they have a high school trades culinary program where the kids are making the meals for the rest of the school every day as part of their program.
Perfect.
And thus, in that case, you're saving a lot of money on the costs. So the food might be half expensive as it would be otherwise, right? Because you obviously still have to pay for the materials. But hey, maybe they get a lot of that stuff donated by some, you know, by
local restaurant,
a restaurant group or something. Who knows? Yep. The point is that the options are almost limitless in that scenario that you're expressing. Whereas in this scenario, look, there's going to be some company like a Sodexo or an Aramark who's going to get this big contract, right, to provide food for the entire school. And, you know, maybe in some weird way, this local business owner who's collecting this money is some weird form of competition to them that shows people that, you know, this can be provided in some other way.
Yeah.
And they don't want that. They want the monopoly.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly to what I'm thinking of right now is the monopoly. They have a monopoly on how this is run. And they're obviously not allowing somebody to bring in different options because they have control and they don't want those options. Because they have the monopoly.
Nobody else,
you don't have a choice to go to another school. I use the same example for security, right? A school might decide to have metal detectors, and another school might decide to have armed guards and metal detectors. Another school might decide to have an open campus, you know?
Right.
And you make that decision saying, I think this is a safer school. I'm going to send my kids here. Yeah, like again, options, right? Like you make those decisions. Why does it have to be a one size fits all you know, no, completely rigid, no options. We can't accept this because equity and all this other nonsense.
Yeah, and exactly. And the one thing I will say is about this too is that it is also possible that there might be some state mandates at play here too, mm-hmm. that it might be, say, might be tying Warwick's hands. So I don't want to dump this all on Warwick because I don't really know. The other thing is that this setup they have where people are paying for lunches is still better than having totally provided by the tax base, because it does at least allow some parents the option to save the money by bagging their own kids' lunch every day,
yeah.
right? Because they're not, it's not like if the school just provided food, you know, with tax dollars, then, you know, no parent would probably bag their kids' lunch. Mm-hmm. Why would I do that? It's not costing me anything.
Right.
But it's a more fair system in that sense. You know, again, this is sort of like that incremental argument we were having where sometimes things are slightly better than an alternative. But I think that in this situation, to turn down charity from, I wish I was on that school committee so I could sit up there and say, like, what is wrong with all of you? What is it? And maybe there was someone on that committee who said that. I don't know. I didn't watch the meeting. All I know is, you know, is that they turned it down. But I mean, I'd be loud and vocal. I'd be on every radio program there was if I was on that school committee saying, I don't know what's wrong with my colleagues. They're out of their minds. Take the money.
Right.
Take it. This is one of those situations where you can feel okay about taking it.
Right.
So
what ends up, I think the ultimate outcome, obviously this woman was not able to do what she wanted to do. So she's reached out through Facebook and said, basically, if you need help, reach out to her directly. And then, you know, there's no need for any child to be denied hot lunch. You know, it's funny.
There you go.
My assumption is she's probably a more left-leaning type person, but kudos to her for not looking to the government to solve the problem and taking it
absolutely
on herself.
Absolutely.
And that's complete speculation.
I think she said that she had met with them a couple times, and that the second time that they denied her, she was like in tears.
Yeah.
And not only because she couldn't help out, or they were saying she couldn't help, but how about all the people that donated?
Yeah.
Because they thought it was going to go to the school lunches, and then all of a sudden it's not. Mm-hmm. So now it's just, I'm so happy that she's just sticking with it and saying, look, come to me directly. Forget going through the middleman of the school department. Just come to me directly. Now, obviously, that presents all sorts of other problems in terms of how do you know if someone really has a, how can they prove it and right. blah, blah, blah. But hey, that's for her to figure out.
That's for, she's,
that's fine.
According to this post, she's setting up a 501c3 charity and
brilliant. The she's power great. Of the,
yep.
man, I and love it. I'm I love sure, it.
A charity, they develop a process for evaluating people who they're going to donate to. And, you know, you bring in your invoice or your invoice that says you owe this amount of money.
Perfect.
Maybe your tax returns or something. You know, however they determine, that's up to them. It's their initiative and their, you know, program that they want to set up. And they determine what's best for them as an organization so they can help the most amount of people.
Isn't it sad that we're, you know, people like to label libertarians as not caring about people who are struggling and people who are going through a hard time.
Yeah.
And we're the ones supporting this woman for doing this amazing thing where she's trying to help out, and you have the government who's stopping her.
Final thing while it's on top of my head before we close out. Similar situation with soup kitchens where they were barred from accepting food from local restaurants that, you know, day old food or from day old bread from the bakery or whatever. You know, like, it's just absolutely nonsense that you're not going to allow these soup kitchens that are trying to do the best they can with the limited resources they have to accept donations from local businesses to help feed people. The government stepped in and said no.
Health department at work.
Yeah, you will not.
So anyway, I think that's going to do it for us for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, you can find us on any major podcast platform. That's iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and others. If you want to contact us, find us on the Facebook page, Liberty RI, or also on Twitter at Liberty RI. You can also contact us directly, which is Mike@LibertyRI.com or Eric@LibertyRI.com. You can also, obviously, you can also go to the website, LibertyRI.com, and check out some of the content that's on there. We definitely hope to be back on a more regular basis as much as we can to at least give you guys a libertarian perspective on what's going on around here, because we do think it's important. And please give us feedback. Please ask us questions. Anything you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know. And we'll see you next time.
Take it easy.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.